Okay, getting ready to start now. Thank you all for staying here until the end. I had the same thing in New Orleans. 3 weeks ago, I had the last session of the show. I was actually asking Michael, who's sitting back there, at the reason for me having the last slot. Is it because you think I'm so good that it'll make people stay here? Or is it because I'm a first-timer in TechEd? So I just get the last slot. He wasn't commenting on that much, but anyway, thank you all for staying so long. My name is Sami Laiho. I'm from Finland. I'm an MVP in the Windows OS. I've been teaching troubleshooting for almost half of my life. I'm also a part of a group called STEP, Springboard Technical Expert Panel, and I'm traveling all around and speaking and teaching and doing consulting. I work for a company called Sovelto, and I also work in my own company called Adminize. I'm a senior technical fellow. Those of you who have seen Mark Rusinovich's talks here, you know that he's only a technical fellow. When I established my own company, I have to give credits to him because he is the only reason for my title. So, if you want to follow me, please do. Twitter is a very important piece of equipment for us MVPs especially. So I do like to tweet a lot. Perhaps you've seen some tweeting during this week about troubleshooting. We were sitting in the Ask the Expert session last night, and we had a really nice problem with a surface which wasn't able to get the functioning key stick. When you press the function key on a surface but you want it to stick so it always stays on, stuff like that. I like tweaking the OS a lot. As I said, I've been teaching OS and especially troubleshooting for a long time. This is actually a picture of my first XP deep dive. That was in 2001. It was held 8 meters under the Atlantic Ocean. Let's say the students survived easily, but Lenovo's didn't, or IBM at that time. Had plenty of fun. So I'm also a scuba diving instructor, so I somehow had to combine these two hobbies. Biggest reason for me being an MVP is actually a project called the Wioski. I had no idea that in Polish it means a village, but this always happens when you pick up a name and you don't have time to Google enough, so it doesn't have anything to do with the village, but it's basically a free replacement for steady state that I've done for Windows 7 and Windows 8. Currently working hard with Windows 8.1. to get it working. Just to establish a few baselines, I hope that you give me some slack for my jokes, because you have to understand a bit where I'm coming from, to understand that I'm having a little bit hard time to translating all my jokes to English. And just a few examples of that, I have to show you a few of these. When many of you do troubleshooting, you need the local administrator account to log on. If you don't have domain is not working or something like that, you get administrator or administrator or administrateur or whatever, but we get this. That's järjestelmävalvoja, and as I know there's so many Finns here, I would like to have a raise of hands of who many can pronounce this. As I thought, there's about half of you guys. Thanks for the support. I actually have cool t-shirts for you guys. I only have about 12 of these, so after the session I'm going to give these out. But they actually have Järjestelmän valvoja on them. So you probably won't get these anywhere else. Even Stephen Rose is wearing one. That's only a word. But if you take a look at the user interface, You guys will find a tool called gpedit.msc, which is a group policy object editor, and we get this. So, bear with me. There are good things about being Finnish. One is that we don't need BitLocker at all because everything is encrypted anyway, so. J.R.R. Tolkien, you know the guy from the Lord of the Rings, he chose Finnish as the base of the language of the elves because he was looking around the world to find a language which would be totally understandable. Oh, not understandable. So, we have a really weird UI, but I'm going to use the English one just to make it a bit easier for you. Housekeeping. I got a cool hat from Kemp. I have to say we had an even cooler hat at New Orleans, but this will do. This is for the raffle. I promised to give out one Surface. So after the session, if you want to try to get it, just please leave your business cards here. And I do need an email because I will send the device later on, so I do need it. I actually did this before I knew about the offer on ticket. So it's not a 79 euro Surface, but it'll do the same. I will also stick around to get some questions and give out the t-shirts, so just get in front here if you want them. What I'm going to go through is black belt troubleshooting. Why is it black belt troubleshooting? It's because I want to make your troubleshooting skills a bit higher than before. If you are looking for a session that will tell you what's broken in Windows 8, this is not the session. This is not a trouble listing session. This is actually trying to make your skills higher in figuring out the errors that you get. We're going to go through a few baselines in Windows first, then we're going to go through some error messaging in Windows. Applications and services, user accounts, pre-lock and diagnostics, processes and threats, and a few final words on BSODs in Windows 8. If you have any questions on Windows 8.1, I'm happy to answer those also, but after the session. First of all, what I teach my students all the time is that if you're doing troubleshooting on Windows, you have to remember that the base logic in Windows is that there is no logic. And Michael is still sitting behind there, so good for that. Just a few examples. That's just to get a baseline on why we have to learn every single tool and why we have to learn how the operating system works, not thinking about some sort of logic into it. Many of you know you have a system partition which logically has all the boot files in it, and we have a boot partition which has all the system files in it. As we have all the 64-bit code in the system 32, and all the 32-bit code in the SysBob 64. If you are doing troubleshooting on an SMB protocol and you try to get it working, you need to tweak the registry. And when you go tweak the registry, you remember that you are not supposed to tweak the browser service, as they say, but you are going to do it with the Bowser service because they misspelled it. You have a really cool networking stack driver thingy in Windows called AFD. It actually, for the few past years, has had a name to it, something like auxiliary functioning driver or something. Yet the name is AFD because of the guy who was responsible for creating the kernel itself was angry for the folks who were trying to get the driver ready, and they couldn't. And he was yelling at them that, why can't you just make it work? And they said, it's working already, but we just don't have a name for it. So he yelled back that it's just another freaking driver. So that's AFD. And you can guess it's not freaking, but F word anyway. Your registry is full of hives. You want to get a registry file open, you load a hive or unload a hive. Hive is the word used, but why? It's because of the guy who was responsible for that part of the registry, for loading the files, was scared of bees. So the guy who was running the show thought that he was trying to go around, get around the project as much as getting around the beehives, so he named them hives. That's why we are always opening hives in the Windows registry. So a few baselines, just you don't think that you would find something logical here. Tools that we're going to use, of course, we're going to use sysinternals tools, like probably many of you guessed. Hopefully trying to do a different kinds of demos and not having the same as Mark had earlier, or the other guys. We're going to use debugging tools and network monitor. We're not actually going to use network monitor so much on this session, but these tools are the ones that you absolutely need to do black belt troubleshooting. First of all, error descriptions. Why are we going through this? Because when you have an error and you get info on it, you would like to have info that you can actually work on. But usually the people who are giving you the errors don't exactly know what you need. So you have to be able to teach them ways of giving you the info in a format that's usable. We have basically two scenarios, two sorts of people. First ones are these, who say that my computer just broke. They have no idea what happened except that their computer is not working, so you're trying to get it working without any info. And then there's the other end, though not that common, which is this. I actually got it from a client of mine. This is during the NT4 era, if you can see the hexadecimal signs there. So you don't really know what to say. It's like, respect, yeah, absolutely respect. You should say thank you for once doing what we've always been telling you. And at the same time, you basically would like to break into laugh because, well, anyway, it should be something in between. We have a few tools that we can use. Just a few of them should be familiar to you, at least. So we're going to have a demo on this. Let's take the virtual machine up here. First of all, people tend to think that we know all the error codes that there are. There's about 32,000 of those in the Windows OS. So we absolutely don't, and we shouldn't. So the first part is to open up a command prompt and just change the layout a bit so you can see this. It has a huge screen, but I'm always used to doing this because I'm in front of a classroom that doesn't have such big screens as this one. As this is a black belt session, we always use this black on black. It's called the ninja mode. You don't actually have to know what you're typing when you know your stuff, so. NetHelp MSG is a really old one, but it just converts the numbers to text. So when you get an error message of 1617, you actually had the text on the screen saying the device has been removed. Oh, then I just chose one that doesn't even have a number to it. When I have this in labs, when I'm doing hands-on labs, people always yell at me like, it's not working, it's saying that the installation package could not be opened. That's exactly what it should be doing. But you don't have to learn this by heart. You do have a few that you have to learn. One of them is 4006, which is the one you have to remember when you go to your company parties, because it says that replication with a non-configured partner is not allowed. But most of them you can just basically forget, so you have a tool to do that. If that's not enough, then you change to the next step, which in Windows 8 or Windows 7 is probably snipping tool. Whoa, not CMD, sorry. Snipping tool is a small gadget that came up with Windows 7, so you can take pictures of the operating system and then just circle whatever you want to do and then just send it via email. I don't have an email program here. Talking about copying and pasting, one thing that people seem to forget is that actually when you have an error dialog like this, you can actually press Control C, open your email, and press Control V. But I don't know why Windows still doesn't have the button of copy error to clipboard, so people would actually know to use it, but it's still there. Snipping tool. I had a question last time after the session of snipping tool being good for doing instructions, but there was a problem with it that you cannot snip menus. If you open a menu and you have snipping tool on, you can't snip it. If you have snipping tool here, say new, and you would like to open the file menu, that won't work. I'm lucky to be teaching people, so I always learn something myself also. And a student of mine was asking me the last time I had a session with them, he asked me that, have you read the help file? Sure. Let's have a coffee break. So actually, if you press Escape now, then open up the menu, whatever you want to do. Let's take a program, like Notepad. You have snipping tool, new, but then press Escape, open up the menu, and then press Control Print Screen, so you can get the menu. I didn't know that. Luckily, one of my students told me. If that's not enough, then you go for something else, PSR, Problem Steps Recorder. PSR is meant to record steps. It's not taking video, so it's not taking that much space. You just start to record, and then the guy working on the problem can just reproduce it, whatever he's trying to do, trying to find his documents, but he's not able to do it. Then he can add comments like there and highlight it and say, where are they? And after he's done, just stop recording, and he can instantly email it to you. So he has screenshots of everything that was pressed during this time. It's working a little better than Windows 7. If you're thinking about this stuff working in Windows 8 or Windows 7, I'd say 95% of the stuff is working in Windows 7. There's not that much new in Windows 8 when it comes to troubleshooting. Okay, so now we have some ways of recording the errors itself. You know what's really tough for us is that we can take the screenshots of our user interface and send it to Microsoft, but no one will understand it anyway. So that's like really bad. There's no, like if you go to knowledge base, there's no way of a Finnish end user who uses it in Finnish to get actually help there. So it's really hard. Pre-logon diagnostics is, we're going to go through this in phases. Before you log on to the computer itself, you will also have to be able to do troubleshooting. If you do troubleshooting for slow logons, there was a way that Michael showed you, and there's other ways also. Anything that's happening before a logon, that could be a startup script with get stuck, that could be just a long logon itself, or there's lots of stuff happening in the OS before someone logs on. But you can't do it without logging on with a user that is already logged on. So there's basically three accounts that we can use: system, network service, and local service. Those are user accounts that we can use. They are already logged on to the system. They are always logged on to the system as soon as you have started it up. How could we do it? There's a super cool thingy in Windows OS called the image file execution options. It's there for debuggers. So Microsoft support services, for example, could have the customer start up a program which actually starts up the debugger before without the customer knowing it. So it's kind of a hidden in the registry, but it's way cool. So that's the easiest way of doing this. Oh, sorry. Let's change back to the virtual machine. Shoot up registry. HK local machine, software, Microsoft, Windows NT, current version, image file execution options. You know that when something starts up in Windows, the first thing that people think that it looks for are things like path variable, telling where it could start stuff from. That's there, of course, yes, but this is way more powerful than that one. So you can actually do whatever you wish. Almost all of my students always say that this is just a perfect thing to get your friends in real trouble. And I can, it's easy to figure out why. If we create a key, and let's say notepad, exe, I would like to replace notepad exe with a debugger, but the debugger would be a calculator. Basically what it would do is starting up notepad. Oh, probably was there already. Let's see, I've written it wrong correctly. Let's start it from here. So here we go. That's the calculator. Not all of the people are that smart that they would go to C Windows, find the notepad and right click and open it. No. There's actually no way of getting notepad going. As I'm trying my best to talk about the search engine of your choice, I've been told to do it. I'm actually running everything on Hyper-V, so I should be okay with this one. But we could do something with that also. So perhaps a little more thorough example might be that let's just open up IE, take the properties, copy the exe name, change this one to chrome.exe, and use a debugger of IE. Now if we go here, let's see. Woohoo! Okay, we're not going to use it for that, but people do use it. Why am I showing it? Partly as a joke, but partly because malware uses it. Malware tries to replace your Microsoft Defender with it, just to prevent it from starting. What we're going to use it is, first of all, we have to figure out something that's running in the logon screen itself, so we know what to attack. So first we need a process monitor. And let's do a filter, which filters the operations whenever filters in the operations whenever a process starts. Okay, so now we have a monitor for processes. Then what we can do is just lock the machine so we get back to the logon screen and then just start hitting on random buttons. Whatever you can make work on the logon screen, but I know there's a few, so there should be a Windows B, which is already working. There's a Windows U for the utilities. There's a way more cool ones, a few of them. So I'm not going to go through all of them. This will do for the demo itself. So here we have it. There's at least display switch.exe and utilman.exe. So we'll just replace the... Actually, what we'll do is we'll do it with display switch. Display switch.exe should be replaced with the command prompt. Let's try it out first. Windows P now shoots up a command prompt as we wish. So what we can do now is just sign out. Before we use the sign-in procedures, we'll just use Windows P to get the command prompt. Luckily for Microsoft, it's even running as system. So we can basically do whatever we wish. For sake of this session, we would be running usually the Process Monitor or Process Explorer, just to get it running in this context. So now you are actually able to do the logons, do whatever, and still get the logging from that phase. What I usually say you shouldn't do is you shouldn't type explorer.exe here, because you will basically shoot up the user interface with a system account, which will circumvent every UAC and anything related to security. So you will just break up your computer by opening IE. So that would be possible, but I honestly would never do that. Just try to work with the command prompt. Wow. Trying to figure out which was the account there, Sami. Okay. Here we're back. If you need more info on logon, then Autoruns is a cool tool. As I've seen so many sessions that have Autoruns on it, I'm not going to talk you about Autoruns, but what I'm going to tell you is a great trick that you can use with Autoruns. I do this very often. Someone calls me and says that they suspect that their computer is infected with something. Whenever they log on, all this stuff runs. So the malware is also starting up. But what you can do actually is just call them, log on using your own account, which is hopefully clean, and then open up Autoruns. You should have it here. But open up Autoruns by pressing Shift, right-click, and run as different user, and then just ask the guy or girl in the other end of the phone to type in his or her user ID and password. What will happen is you will actually do an emulated logon of what would happen if she or he would log on without logging on. So the malware won't be able to start, but you know what would start, so you can clean it before it starts. Easy way of getting rid of certain malware, although I'm on this one, in my company, I'm counting on the fact that the end users don't have admin rights, so that's of course something that should be there as a baseline. And also the one that Michael mentioned, Windows Performance Toolkit. This is an actual screenshot that I did. I was laughing about it, that it's the actual screen that I did, but I've actually seen it two times during this conference, because I've been getting so much emails from the other speakers that do you have actual content that you did. So you probably have seen this one before, but it's actually mine. There's a logon that took 400 seconds, and after a group policy preference object, which was causing it all, takes only under 200 seconds, so 50% improvement. Background services. Before we get to the actual running software that we use, there's lots of background services working in the behind. So usually we have two different scenarios. We've got a service that's not starting, or we have a service that's not running in Windows 8. So what can we do about that one? Basically, it's a security issue or something else. That's the first thing that you can divide them by. Security issue or something else. The or something else is quite broad, I know. But let's just get the about 60 to 70% of the cases are security related. So that's why that's there. If it's a security issue, then what I usually do is I use the local security settings editor. So I can take it from here. Oh, sorry. That's SecPol. Let's take this one. So the user gets, as the services, they get their user rights, most of them from here. So what I tend to do is, first of all, create an account and put the account on every single line that has administrators in it. So first of all, what I have to be able to check is if the service is requiring more rights than it has, but I don't want to put it in the administrators group because I want to have at least as little permissions as I can. But it might be because of this. You have the basic who am I command to show you what your access token looks like. So who am I slash all. There's who am I. That's I honest to God, I placed a bet with the Norwegian guy that I wouldn't put this here, so I had to do it. But who am I slash all was the one that I was looking for. Let's make sure morning a little bit better when you see that. So who am I slash all shows you the access token of the user. That's easy. We know what this user can do, but as a service, that's a lot more difficult because you can't log on as a service so easily. First of all, process monitor. If you're up, whatever reason, they told it to you today that something gets broken, run process monitor. So that's the basic law of troubleshooting. So same goes here. First of all, you check the process ID of the service itself, so you know what process it uses, and then you'll just do a process monitor filter on the process ID to get the listing of what it tries to do. To know how a service works, you have to become a service. Now we're getting to the black belt stuff now. Sounds ninja. When you start referring to services as he or she, you're starting to get the point. They are normal user accounts that run services, three of them. System, network service, local service. They have user profiles, as all users. They're just hidden in different places. So some of them are hidden in the Windows service profiles. Mr. Local Service and Mr. Network Service are working from here. They've got their desktop documents, pictures, pictures of family, etc. Mr. Local Service and Mr. Network Service live there. And Mrs. System lives here. There's a really good reason for referring to local service and network service as Mr. and system as Mrs., but we'll see that later on. That's the system profile folder under the config folder. They've got totally different user rights. If you're running a service as a system account, then she will have total control of the local computer. But when she authenticates out of the computer, she will use the computer account from the Active Directory if it's domain joined. If you are using local service will have almost no rights in the local computer. I think users have lots of rights, but my customers seem to believe that they have no rights. I was just having a security conference few months before this and talking about taking away the admin rights for local users to only use limited accounts. And there was an angry guy who yelled at me that, you make it sound like we can't do anything except our job with these computers. Sorry. But I think that users can do a lot, but still a lot less than administrators. And then there's Mr. Network Service. So Mr. Network Service is a local user, a normal limited user, but when authenticating out, it uses the computer account again. So basically three steps. This was already done in Windows XP. Windows 2000 used the only system account, but we've had this since Windows XP. Also, service accounts have SIDs. This is something new, which wasn't in XP. Every single service can actually be referred to as a user. It's a security principle, which means that it will actually be able to get permissions or be denied permissions. If you want to use service accounts in the UI, you can do that also. For example, you must have seen this on Windows 7 or Windows 8, the trusted installer, dude, screwing up everything, blocking you from deleting files, etc. That's Mr. Trusted Installer, or actually Mrs. Almost as powerful as system. You can refer to services with NT space service backslash and the service name if you need to give them rights without using service accounts. That might be something that you are used to doing, but it's easier with these. So if we take the VM, let's see this. SC show SID this. Show SID spooler. That spooler SID. That means it has a security identifier, which means that it's a security principal, which means it can get permissions. You have to be careful with this one, though, because if we check the SID of spooler, it also has a SID. Even Mr. Spooler has a SID. Although every one of you know this in Windows 8.1, there's the super secret Prism surveys, which has a SID also. So basically, it only uses the string of letters to figure out the SID. So it's same on every computer, and you just have to be really careful that you type the service name correctly. Also, you can use qprivs, which will show you the privileges. That's almost the same as running Who Am I for yourself. Rivs. That's the actual access. That's the access token of the service itself. So, if we really want to learn how to do troubleshooting, we have to be using the correct tools, but we also have to be using the correct measures to do troubleshooting. First of all, you cannot do proper troubleshooting with an admin account. So the first thing we do is take the system account into use, because system account is way more powerful than an admin account. System has privileges way beyond the admin itself. She doesn't need to. If you're wondering why I'm struggling with he or she, is the fact that Finland doesn't use those. We have the same word for both men and women, so figure that out. Why not worrying about policies? Because group policies don't affect Mrs. System. Can see stuff that admins can't, can stop processes that admins can't. Be careful with that one, because you can totally crash your computer with it easily. And the last one is something bit more weird. Everyone raise their hands up who know what mandatory integrity control in Windows means. Few. Three of them are my students, so a few others. Good. Actually, in New Orleans, there was no one, and I was really amazed. We had about perhaps the same amount of people, but it's been there since Vista, and still people don't tend to know it, although it's more powerful than share or NTF permissions. So it can block you from getting into a file, although you have full control of it, NTFS or share permission-wise. It's a way of controlling what processes can do to resources. So you could think about a process being IE and resource being a My Documents folder, for example. We actually have more than these, but these are the four that you can control. So there are hidden ones on top and down below, but these are the four that we can use. So a process will inherit its access token from the user who started the process. Users who are limited users will have an integrity level of medium. Your administrators will have the integrity level of medium unless they use run as administrator. Then they will get the integrity level of high. And only Mrs. System will ever get to the system level. And then you have resources, which have different kinds of levels. If you've ever been wondering why your profile nowadays has a few special folders, let's see who's here. Mr. Demo. There's the folder app data, which is divided into three folders, roaming, local, and local low. The obvious thing here is that roaming stuff will roam with the roaming profile, and local stuff will not roam with the roaming profile. But local and local low, that's because of integrity levels. The local folder has an integrity level of medium, as the local low has an integrity level of low. IE, for example, is running with an integrity level of low, so it can only write to the real garbage pack local low. It cannot write to local. Your documents is running as medium, so you might think, I can open up IE, save a PDF to my documents folder. But it's actually not the IE process that is doing it, but it's actually shooting up another process to do it because it will not be able to do it. So, whenever you are trying to destroy something from Windows and it says you can't, you first of all check your permissions. If you are still unable to destroy a file, for example, first of all, 99% of the time you do take own.exe because it's the trusted installer dude who is owning it instead of you. So you can't destroy it before you take ownership. That's the first one. Solves 99% of cases. When it happens that you absolutely cannot destroy a file and it says that you don't have access to it, you know you have full control access to it, you do all sorts of weird stuff like saying everyone full control in both share and NTFS, and still you're not able to destroy it, then it's because of the integrity levels. So iCackles is the only way of controlling these in Windows. Mark Minassi has really cool tools that he's done on his website, which can do the same. But in Windows, you can use there's regexe for registry, which has also integrity levels, and then there's iCackles for files. You'll just do set integrity level medium, lower the integrity level, and then you can destroy it. How do we run a system? System can usually destroy stuff that you can't. So easiest way to run system. There's one way of running system with the MDT toolkit. If you have MDT, you get a exe called serviceui.exe. As Michael is luckily still sitting behind there, I'm using MDT to all sorts of other stuff too, but it has cool stuff that you can use for many other scenarios, one of them being this serviceui.exe, because it can actually bypass the service isolation, if you know what Windows Vista first introduced. If you try to schedule a task with Windows at.exe, for example, it says that due to security enhancements, the task will run, but not interactively. You can't get up from the service level 0 to service level 1. But this one will bypass it. That's way too hard, so we use this. That's the easier one. That's the sysinternal tools, psexec-sid, which has nothing to do with SIDs. It's --system-interactive-don't-wait. So I just remember it easier this way, but actually doesn't have anything to do with SIDs. So let's go here. First of all, if looking at a normal admin, for example, this guy will never see the contents of system volume information, although he's an administrator who has chosen the run as administrator, so UAC is not preventing it. If we shoot up registry, regedit. And go to SAM or security, they seem to be empty. I'm Mr. Built-in Admin, so I should be able to do everything, but I'm not able to do half of it. Okay. Who am I? Now we're against system. If you look at the access token of system, it belongs to system mandatory level. That's a way of you to see what integrity level a user is having. If you do this with a normal admin, who am I /groups, high mandatory level, although the built-in admin. If he goes to whatever, let's take the two examples, that's opening up nicely. Regedit opens up stuff that should never be open to anyone. So basically you need this guy to be able to do troubleshooting because he's the only one who sees everything that's happening. He can also bypass group policies. I learned this from a friend of mine because I had a computer in my living room. I used to be really nerdy. I had an Active Directory at home with the organizational units, living room, bedroom, kitchen. But I've gotten rid of that since. What happens is that if you do a group policy which is preventing you from using certain software, for example. So I had a group policy in place that said that on my living room computer you would be able only to run Zune and IE. That's right. I was honestly talking to a guy outside of here. He was telling another speaker, this was in New Orleans, but the guys were talking to each other, two speakers, and the other speaker said that when you have a speech here, you have to remember always to say that you are Googling with Bing. I was like, they own the verb? But anyway, I was using Zune and IE on the living room computer, and nothing else. So suddenly I go there and they are running some other software, like Winamp, at that time. I was like, how are you doing this? And we're scheduling it. Because if you use Task Scheduler, it will use the system account and it doesn't get the policies. So we're scheduling it. I was like, okay, fair enough. New stuff for my courseware anyway, so I learned a lot from those guys. What else do you need psxec-sid for? Whenever you're trying to install something with, for example, startup scripts, you know that you are going to do something with Active Directory startup scripts and you test it out. It works fine on your user but doesn't work when you run it. That's because you test it with an admin account. But it's the system who's running the startup script. Same goes for running SCCM tasks that use system account. You can't test them with an admin. Easiest example would be something like testing out MSI exec-i server software soft.msi-qn-. You test it out, it works great, but it doesn't work with the startup script or with an SCCM installation. That's because what you should have done is stick the bsexec here. That's easy as that, and you're actually trying if it's working with the system account, so it'll also work after you do it in the real environment. So basically two scenarios. One is for testing out SCCM or Active Directory scripts, and the other one is troubleshooting. So when we get the OS running, and then we get the services up and running, and we're starting to figure out how software works, that's when we come to process diagnostics, the next step. Processes and threads. What makes a yellow belt troubleshooter? Someone who actually, he believes that he knows Windows. Those are the guys who shoot up Task Manager and then try to shut down the program from the first tab. So yellow belts tend to do this. Shoot up Task Manager, take the process, and present task. And they actually believe that these are applications. These processes here don't really have anything to do with actual running code. These are more close to Windows. When we go to details, we have the blue belt dudes. The blue belt guys are the ones who know better. There's four of the yellow belt guys at a party trying to get the music up and running, and it's not working on the computer, and then the blue belt guy goes there and says, it's not called a music folder. It's actually explorer.exe. He's way cooler, and he goes here, takes the explorer.exe, shuts it down, and you all know what happens then. Then even the blue belt is in trouble. Then he goes and shuts down the machine, and the music is still not running. Playing, sorry. That's actually, I'm having quite fun with this usually, because this could also be named like, this topic of mine could also be say bad thing about Task Manager, because I could say that Task Manager kind of sucks if you think about troubleshooting. But Task Manager can only show you processes. And the bad thing is that in Windows, a process cannot do anything. That's why even blue belts don't get the trouble sorted out. You have a process, you kill it, or you, even better, you use the search engine of your choice. How do you sell? Bing. Okay, so you go here, and you type explorer.exe is hanging. I'll bet you the answer is there. You just have 24,200 pages to go through, but it usually is there. It's not that the internet doesn't contain the answer. It probably is there, but it's just too hard to find because of all the noise. So processes can't do anything. Every single process has a thread, a sub-process, if some people call it a sub-process, but it's only the threads that can run code. So this would be brave, but I'm still willing to bet you about 100 euros, not more, but about 100 euros that Vista had never problems with explorer.exe hanging. It actually didn't. Because the thing is that it's not explorer.exe that is hanging, even in Vista and even before SP1. So most often when you have a malware that is hanging your Explorer XE. It's not hanging Explorer XE, but a thread of it. So the first thing is how to get rid of the noise. You want to have the same questions. You want to have the questions better, and you want to focus them so that there are less people answering to your questions when you find something on the internet. So you get rid of the noise that way. So first of all, here's our Bing with 24,200 results. Task manager not able to even show threads. This is actually quite weird, but if you think about task manager is unable to show you what's running. So you probably, at least most of you, know what I'm going to use. So it's Process Explorer. And if you've ever seen Mark turn on the options of replace task manager, you actually now know what it does. Because it inserts in the registry the image file execution option of taskmanager.exe running Process Explorer. So if you go here and find the explorer.exe causing the problem, going to properties and threads, it says you would need debugging tools. You don't need it now, but it's better to install debugging tools to get more info of Process Explorer. But so here we can see CPU. Who's hogging the CPU? It's shcore.dll. Explorer has quite a lot of threads. It's one of these that's hanging the computer. What I usually do with malware is I come here, check who's hogging the CPU, and press suspend. It's anyway malware, so it won't stop the operating system. It just stops the malware, so you can go and fix the computer because it's normally unresponsive at the time when you're doing this. So if we change the search a little bit, where did I? Oh, actually, it was here. Probably. So let's go here. Bing.com and shcore. That's not an actual error, as you can figure out, because the computer is still responsive of working, but that's basically the idea behind it, just to make your search phrases a bit more accurate. A bit more accurate, 1,000 times more accurate. What about safe mode? If the computer and the software are not running at all, so you actually are getting a computer that you just can't boot it up, then the first thing that you could do is run safe mode, but the bad thing is that we don't know what safe mode does, which means that if you get it working in safe mode, how do you know what to take out of the real mode to make it working? What's the difference between a safe mode and the actual OS running? That's luckily only a registry setting. So you do have to learn how to tweak the safe mode to be able to use it as a proper troubleshooting tool. The weirdest thing about safe mode is that if you go to Microsoft's website, they will tell you that if you can't uninstall, if you install a program and you're trying to use it and it's not working and your computer stops responding, then you should go to safe mode and remove the software. What do they tell you should be using as an installer if you install software? They say it should be Microsoft's Windows installer. So they say to you that use MSIs, and they say if it doesn't work, get it out of the computer with safe mode. Let's see that in action. First of all, how to get to safe mode. The longest device driver in Windows 8, or the driver that takes the longest time when booting up a Windows 8, was basically the USB keyboard. So they were really happy to get rid of this anyway, but now with the slates, it's even more important because you don't have a keyboard that you could use F8 to press on. So that's why actually you can't press F8 to get to safe mode. So you have to use one of the ways mentioned here. Easier one is Shift Restart. So I've installed Adobe Reader. Adobe Reader has nothing wrong with it. It's always working and doesn't need any security fixes. So we'll just pretend that it's not working. We need to get to the safe mode. I really like that Windows 8.1 has the right-click shutdown thingy. I'm always struggling to find this even. But let's press Shift Restart. What actually happens is that it shoots up a small Windows RE, which we use to troubleshoot. We are not going to refresh and reset, because this is free commercial time for me. Reset and refresh are so fast that they take only about 15 minutes to get your computer up and running. My Wioski does exactly the same thing, but it takes 20 seconds, so you can try it out if you wish. Advanced settings and startup settings. It's really easy to get to safe mode, by the way. Enable safe mode. Okay, so enable safe mode number 4. The question was that does it always take longer because of the USB keyboard drivers? USB keyboard driver is not being loaded now. It's taking more time to get to safe mode just because of Windows taking out certain accelerations from the OS. So we'll wait a while. It'll be there, I hope. Here we go. Okay, so what do we do next? We uninstall stuff. appwiz.cpl. Add remove programs. I have no. I've never used. I always use the CPL and MSC commands and stuff like that. I'm typing everything, but you can figure out it's not that easy to find it in the Finnish UI anyway. So I tend to always use these short ones. But it was the exactly same thing as you would have get if you just choose add or remove software. So we're here. Let's go Adobe Reader and uninstall an MSI package from the safe mode. Nice instructions. Use MSIs, and if they don't work, get rid of them in safe mode. But you cannot get rid of them in safe mode because Windows installer is not running. That's easy for the, you know, the home customers, the end customers. They probably know that they first have to go to services.msc, and then they will go to find the Windows installer service. First thought that so they can remove. No. Actually not, because Microsoft totally prevented safe mode from using Windows installer, so not even like this. So now we need to get to the registry part. And now you will always, now you will also learn how the safe mode itself is working and how to figure out what is running in safe mode and what is not, to figure out the cause itself. So we go to Regedit, and go to System, Current Control Set, Control, Safe Boot. It has two keys to it, because there's the normal safe mode and safe mode with networking. We are now in the normal safe mode. And it has a key for every driver and every service that is running in safe mode. So you can actually get a list to figure out what's different between safe mode and a normal mode. But we'll have to inject something here. So we'll go here, minimal, new key, and type in the key, type in the name of the service, which is MSI server, and change its default value to a service or a driver, so it's a service. Go here, Windows installer, start, get it up and running. Go here, and uninstall. Now we get it. The actual time that I learned this was because of a certain manufacturer who does all sorts of security stuff. I can't mention their name. They sell these yellow boxes of stuff. But if you ever used their antivirus and tried to get it out of a computer, so then this is the proper way of doing it. It actually gets it out of there. So I learned it just trying to do that. So there's the register part. Now we have used and manipulated safe mode. There's also a semi-safe mode if you want. I often use the other one on the left side. So msconfig. Because you can do sort of safe modes, but not total safe modes. So first of all, what I do is hide all Microsoft services because I know that Windows doesn't always work, but if you install Windows on its own and nothing else, it should actually work. So this way you can first of all take out all the other services except the ones that are built in. But the good thing is that if you remove something from here and come back here after the reboot, it'll look exactly the same. So you have the inventory of what you have taken out instead of typing it in Notepad or... I don't have a bad word to say about Notepad, but this is quite a lot easier. If you do troubleshooting with a server, perhaps, and you have to type in what you have done, talking about the ninja stuff, you have to know also the sacred art of Notepadism, whatever. So when you are doing some troubleshooting and you have to type in stuff that you have already done, then you should take an empty Notepad and type in .log on the first row, nothing else, then save it to your desktop as error log. So now whenever you have to open up your error log, it will always type in the timing for you automatically. So Notepad has secret stuff into it, but that's another topic. We don't have time for that now. There's also the autoruns that I mentioned earlier. What about BSODs? The new stuff in Windows 8. You do still get blue screens, although they have the smiley thingy only, but it's still a blue screen. The same thing's happening. And actually, the configuration is a lot better than Windows 7. Because in Windows 7, if you had more 2 gigs or more of memory, then you would lose the ability to create a complete memory dump. The only way of doing it was via registry. So now it's back. And there's also an automatic memory dump. Whenever a process in the Windows kernel itself crashes, it uses the last option that it has, and it asks the computer to go to blue screen. So blue screen is not crashing, but the computer is asking it to go to blue screen. So it's the last thing it can do. What happens then is that if there's something running in the kernel mode, usually you would only need the kernel memory dump. But in some occasions, you might have an unresponsive Word application, for example, and you would like Microsoft support to take a look at it. So they will need you to generate a complete memory dump because they need both the kernel memory and the user mode memory. So then you need to do a complete memory dump. The automatic memory dump actually works in the way that it uses the kernel memory dump, and whenever your computer starts crashing, it'll just raise the page file size higher, because page file is the place where the memory dump is written to. So it raises it up, and if for 2 weeks it hasn't crashed again, then it will lower the size of the page file. So it's way better than the Windows 7 one. And as I said, you have to be able to crash your computer, because blue screen is a good thing, not a bad thing. You have to, in certain occasions when the software is running, you would have to be able to crash the machine to get the dump out of it. So there's a KP article which says that you inject a registry key. It's now fixed. It didn't used to work with USB keyboards in the Windows 7 times, but now it's fixed. Now it works also with USB. So you can just crash your computer whenever you wish. It's basically you type in the registry key, then you just press Control Scroll Lock Scroll Lock, and Control Scroll Lock. Lucky me. There is something like this. So it's the same blue screen that you had before, but looks a bit different. It's trying to give you the error, but usually it can't. So you will have to be able to get the device driver usually, or any piece of code that's hanging your computer. So you have a few basic steps on what you have to do. You have to install the Windows debugging tools. With Windows debugging tools, you get the ability to download symbols for your computer. It's easier to download them from Microsoft's symbol server than always reinstalling them whenever you get a hotfix. So you should put a system variable in, system variable ntSymbolPath pointing to a local folder and Microsoft symbol server, so it'll download them on the fly. It's not actually the real symbols, because Microsoft has a private symbol server and a public symbol server. Only internal people can use the private one, because it's not open code, so they don't want you to know what the actual function names are. But basically, you are dealing with the same people who are all using this when you're going to Bing. And you will get the answers anyway. So it doesn't matter that you don't get to the private one, because that would be usually only developers that would be interested in that. So that's a small intro to troubleshooting. I hope that these are more, as I said, I'm not here to tell you what's broken. I hope that you learned new stuff to get things working rather than getting a list of errors that someone else knows already. If you want to find me, go to about.me, that's the easiest way. Follow Twitter. I do hope that because this is my first ever TechEd session in Europe, as I did one in New Orleans 2 weeks ago, more than ever, I would like you to please fill in the evaluations, because that's the only way that I'm ever getting back here. With that, I would like you, if you want to join the lottery and win the Surface RT, just bring your business cards here in the hat, and I have a few t-shirts and time for some questions. I'm leaving in 4 hours, so not that long, but still. Thank you very much.